Hello and welcome to this special Palm Sunday edition of Between Two Worlds with Pastor Alan Baker, the radio outreach ministry of Christ Community Presbyterian Church in West Hartford, Connecticut. On this weekly 30-minute broadcast, it's always our aim to challenge you and encourage you with the gospel of Jesus Christ toward eternal transformation and to provide practical solutions for living in today's complex world. At the close of the broadcast, we'll share more about Christ Community, how to download a free copy of today's program, and more about a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Well, it is Palm Sunday, as we mentioned. It's April 17th, and Pastor Alan Baker presents a message today that's really apropos to this month. He's asking the question, who is Jesus? He'll answer a number of things about him. For example, is he an imposter? On this week's Between Two Worlds, here's Pastor Alan Baker.
My intention here is to take up three questions that often surface in today's world concerning the person of Jesus. Was Jesus an imposter who did not fulfill messianic prophecies? Are Christianity's beliefs about Jesus taken from pagan religions? And are people free to choose what they wish to believe about Jesus? First, was Jesus an imposter who did not fulfill messianic prophecies? In 2006, Jews for Jesus, an organization of Jews who have become followers of Jesus, put on a major campaign in New York City seeking to blanket the city with their claims that Jesus of Nazareth fulfills the Hebrew Scriptures' prophetic words about Messiah. Jewish leaders in New York City rebuffed this campaign, seeking to prove that Jesus is not Messiah. With over 240,000 Jews in America now claiming Jesus to be Messiah, and especially for those of us living in West Hartford with our large Jewish population, this is a particularly appropriate question. You may not embrace the inspiration, infallibility, and inerrancy of the Scriptures, as I explained to them last week, and that's okay for now. However, there really is no other way to discuss this issue without referring to both the Hebrew Scriptures and what Christians call the New Testament Scriptures. The Hebrew Scriptures are the only ancient writings that specifically predict future events, what we call prophecies. By this I mean words that predict certain events hundreds of years beforehand in great detail that can now be verified. Either they happened or they did not. One of the most remarkable examples of this specific prophecy is one of Daniel, who, preaching some 600 years before Christ, predicted the fall of the Babylonian Empire, the rise and fall of the Medo-Persian Empire, the rise and fall of the Greek Empire, and then the rise and fall of the Roman Empire, things that happened hundreds of years later. The question then is this: is Jesus of Nazareth Messiah prophesied in the Hebrew Scriptures? In Genesis 49:10, we are told that the scepter will not depart from Judah. And in Isaiah 11:1 says that a root will come up from the stump of Jesse, that is the father of King David, and from his roots a branch will bear fruit. The term branch is commonly used to refer to Messiah. This promises a lasting kingship through David for all the ages. Yahweh, that's the Hebrew word for the Lord, declares in Jeremiah 23, verse 5, that he will raise up from David's line a righteous branch, a king who will reign wisely. In the prophet Isaiah, we find a number of references to the suffering servant of Yahweh, and some Jewish traditions recognize this suffering servant as Messiah. Isaiah 42 says that he will bring forth justice to the nations. Isaiah 49 says that he will regather the tribes of Israel to God. Further, God promises to make his suffering servant a light to the Gentiles, Isaiah 49:6. He promises that he will be born in Bethlehem, Micah 5, verse 2. He promises that he will be born of a virgin, Isaiah 7, verse 14. Then the most well-known passage on the suffering servant of Yahweh is Isaiah 52 and 53, saying that he will suffer terribly, but that he will be highly exalted, bearing the sins of his people, that he will die and then live forever. In 2 Chronicles 7, God says that when Israel's sins reach a certain level, he will destroy the temple. And the prophet Daniel says in Daniel 9 that God would have mercy and rebuild the temple. Both of these things, as we know from history, have happened. Haggai, preaching in the 5th century B.C., said that the second temple would be greater than the first temple. It would be filled with the glory of Yahweh. Malachi, the last of the Hebrew prophets, wrote that Yahweh would suddenly come to his temple, and the glory of Yahweh would appear, bringing purification to some, but judgment to others. The atonement coming through the second temple, prophesied by Haggai and Malachi, had to occur before the second temple was destroyed. And when was it destroyed? Well, the answer is 70 AD through Titus of the Roman Empire. And when did Jesus die? He died around 30 AD. And finally, the New Testament gospel writer and apostle Matthew, at the start of his gospel, says, "The record of the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham." Matthew obviously believed Jesus was the Messiah, that Jesus was the fulfillment of Yahweh's promise that David would always have a descendant on the throne of Israel. In referring to Jesus as the son of Abraham, he is stressing the connection between the father of the Jews and the Messiah. Perhaps it is also helpful to remember that all the apostles were Jews, that all the earliest followers of Jesus were Jews who had come to Jerusalem for Pentecost and believed on Jesus through the preaching of the Apostle Peter. The bottom line, my friend, is this. Either Messiah came 2,000 years ago, or the Hebrew prophets missed it entirely. And if they missed it entirely, then why should anyone trust anything else they said? There is no other person who meets the qualifications to be Messiah but Jesus of Nazareth. By the way, the Hebrew name for Jesus is Yeshua, from which we get Joshua, which means I will certainly save. So, according to the Hebrew scriptures, Messiah has to be Jesus of Nazareth. Now, if we wish to discard the Hebrew scriptures, then that's another issue. However, if one takes them seriously, there is no option. Only Jesus of Nazareth accomplished all that was prophesied prior to 70 AD. When you put all these Hebrew prophecies together, there is no option. It has to be Jesus. Another objection to Christianity that is prominent today comes from some who say that Christianity's beliefs about Jesus were borrowed from pagan religions. They say the idea of a virgin birth is nothing new, that the presence of a God-man is also taught by many other religions. Many have recently said that the notion of Jesus being raised from the dead is found in writings about numerous mythical gods of antiquity. In fact, Dan Brown in The Da Vinci Code has his character say that nearly every aspect of Christianity, from the virgin birth to communion to the resurrection, were all borrowed from gods and goddesses of pagan religions. In the Jesus Mysteries, written by Thomas Freck and Peter Gandy, these men say that each mystery religion has its own version of a dying and resurrecting God-man. In Egypt, he was known as Osiris. In Greece, he was known as Dionysus. In Asia Minor, he was Attis. In Jerusalem, he was Jesus. The idea here is that Christianity is not authentic. Admittedly, at first glance, there are several aspects of Christianity and pagan mystical religions that bear resemblance. Writers have said that Mithras, a pre-Christian god of Persia, was born of a virgin in a cave on December 25th, was a traveling teacher, had 12 followers, who promised people immortality, who sacrificed himself, was buried in a tomb, and was raised from the dead 3 days later. He supposedly instituted a Eucharistic meal and was called the Logos. Now, what shall we say to these things? Well, first, even if there are similarities between Christianity and pagan religions, these in no way negate the strong historical evidence to prove the authenticity of Christianity. The resurrection of Jesus from the dead is a fact of history. He appeared to more than 500 people at one time. He appeared to his disciples at least 4 times after his resurrection. His disciples, who died for their belief in Jesus and his resurrection, if knowingly preaching a lie, would never have allowed themselves to die as martyrs. They would have recanted. The Gospels all were written within 30 years of Christ's death. And the apostles all preached the resurrection of Jesus from the very beginning. Eyewitnesses never disputed their message. Religious and Roman authorities tried to silence them. They killed them, but they could never disprove their story. More importantly, the claim that Christianity borrowed from ancient mystical pagan religions cannot be substantiated. It is true that these religions predated Christianity, but it is not true that they taught virgin births, resurrections, or Eucharistic meals. Swedish scholar and member of the Royal Academy of Letters, T.N.D. Mettinger, in his book, The Riddle of Resurrection, says that the consensus among modern scholars, nearly universal, is that there was no dying or rising gods that preceded Christianity. Such references all came after the first century AD. In other words, it was the pagan religions that borrowed from Christianity, adding to their stories the virgin birth, etc. Mettinger looked closely at the supposedly 3 to 5 dying and rising gods that predated Jesus of Nazareth, and he found that there is nothing there. The closest reference was to gods who died in the fall of the year and came back to life in the spring, a means of explaining the vegetation cycles. This is vastly different from Christianity because it is not tied to vegetation cycles, and it only happened once. Furthermore, the very nature of the Christian message was something obviously spoken to be believed, whereas the mythical religions had their gods dying and rising each year as a mere explanation of the cycles of nature. Their explanation of the vegetation cycles being gods dying and rising reminds us of our tradition of explaining the sun shining during rain as the devil beating his wife. No one takes that as a legitimate explanation of the weather. And one last thing. Some have suggested that the early Christian apologist, Justin Martyr, who lived from 100 to 160 AD, wrote around 150 AD of parallels between the dying and rising gods and Jesus. If true, then this would suggest that maybe Christianity did borrow from these pagan religions after all. How do we explain Martyr's comments? It is important to understand why Martyr was writing. Christians were being severely persecuted by the Romans, and Martyr's argument to move them to stop it was this: why are you killing Christians who believe in Jesus, that Jesus was killed and rose again from the dead? You're not killing or persecuting those who have similar beliefs about their gods. When one looks at the fuller context of what Martyr was writing, it becomes obvious that he was stretching to make a point. For example, he speaks of the sons of Jupiter, saying that Aeculapius was struck by lightning and went to heaven, that Bacchus, Hercules, and the others rode to heaven on the horse Pegasus. that he mentions that when Augustus was cremated, someone in the crowd said that he saw Augustus' spirit ascending from the flames. No respected scholar would consider these statements on par with the straightforward way the Gospels portray Jesus is dying and rising from the dead. The bottom line is that Brown, Freck, and Gandy are at the very least terribly misinformed, or at the very worst deceitful. The mystical pagan religions borrowed from Christianity, adding to their stories tales of virgin birth, Eucharistic meals, and resurrections. And those few references to God's dying and rising were ways of explaining the annual vegetation cycle. These were not true, momentous resurrections from real death to life. A third question for our consideration is this: are people free to believe what they wish about Jesus? Well, on the one hand, I can say absolutely. People can believe anything they wish about anything. A follow-up statement, however, is, but can this be a valid and truthful statement? People are averse to organized religion in our day, and many, therefore, are devising their own religion. Los Angeles Lakers basketball coach Phil Jackson, for example, calls himself a Zen Christian. And I read recently where a woman told a Presbyterian minister that she is a Presbyterian Buddhist. Most today see nothing out of the ordinary about these titles, things which, historically speaking, are mutually exclusive. That is, Christianity and Zen teach very different things, as does a Presbyterian minister like myself teach differently than a Buddhist monk. We now champion tolerance and diversity. Why? Well, René Descartes, a 17th century mathematician and faithful Roman Catholic, in a desire to find the very essence of truth, said he must begin with what he knows is true. He knew that he existed because he was able to think. So he began with his famous cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. Unwittingly, Descartes moved Europe away from confidence in the scriptures to natural reason. This led to a confidence in science as the measure of all truth, leading to logical positivism, a philosophy that taught nothing is real unless it can be experienced by one of the five senses. This ushered in modernism, which some say reigned supreme from the French Revolution in 1789 to the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989. Modernism denied supernaturalism in general and the miracles of Christianity in particular. However, in the 1960s, scholars began to challenge the idea of truth with a capital T. They looked at the horrors of the Bolsheviks, fascists, Nazis, and racists in South Africa and America, and said that sweeping truth claims of any sort eventually end up oppressing people. This has found its way into every area of life, including religion. So, a militant Muslim intent on jihad and a conservative Jerry Falwell type Christian are in the same boat, scary people who claim they have a corner on truth. Consequently, we have come to the place in the West where we now champion diversity of every kind. We are uneasy about anyone who makes absolute truth claims. So, we now have people who take aspects of Christianity, like God's love and mercy, the peace aims of the Dalai Lama, and a search for inner tranquility that Zen promises, and make their own religion. They say, truth is relative. This is true for me, though it may not be true for you. We now call this way of thinking postmodernism. There are many positive things about postmodernism. One of the more trivial benefits is the move back to the old school baseball uniforms of the Boston Red Sox and Philadelphia Phillies and Atlanta Braves. I might add that the Yankees never went to the new school modernistic uniforms of the 1970s. And then we have a return to the old school ballparks like Camden Yards and the newer stadiums in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. More importantly, however, is a new interest in social justice and community, something that tended to be lost when most were simply interested in making money in the 1980s. However, a casualty of postmodernism is an unwillingness to address the illogical foundation of their thought system. The law of non-contradiction makes clear that mutually exclusive terms cannot both be true. For example, for one to call oneself a Zen Christian or a Presbyterian Buddhist is illogical. Zen and Buddhism teach many things contrary to Christianity and Presbyterianism. Likewise, Christianity and Presbyterianism teach many things contrary to Zen and Buddhism. It is completely illogical for one to assert that both these mutually exclusive terms are true. I understand the reluctance of people to embrace sweeping truth claims. After all, Mao, Hitler, and Stalin all claimed to speak truth, and embracing their truth claims led to millions of deaths in the 20th century. The buzzword today is tolerance. The definition of tolerance has changed in the last 20 years. Prior to that time, to be tolerant meant that even if you disagreed with someone's lifestyle, religion, political ideology, or things of that nature, you at least treated that person with dignity and respect. Today, however, to be tolerant means you must accept the other person's lifestyle and views, even champion them, never saying anything that could be construed as disagreeable. The new definition of tolerance has led to religious and moral relativism. Think about it. When anyone says truth is relative, is he not making a sweeping truth claim? Is he not stating truth with a capital T? The simple fact is that everyone, every day, makes truth claims. The relativist, by definition, believes that his relativism is true, not only for himself, but for all of us. He may say that he is a Zen Christian, and while one may disagree with his religion, that's okay, because one can worship God in his own way. But when one says, well, you are certainly free to be a Zen Christian, but that point of view is logically impossible and cannot be true, then he becomes upset with the one challenging his position. At this point, he ceases to be relativistic. He is being dogmatic. He is speaking truth with a capital T. So relativism breaks down very quickly. At the end of the day, we must agree that true relativism is impossible. I have a friend who grew up Buddhist and has a PhD in classical studies from a major university. She has many friends in the academic community who applauded her Buddhism, saying that they champion ethnic and religious diversity. However, when my friend became a fervent follower of Jesus, leaving her Buddhism behind, her friends suddenly turned on her. They have rejected her and they mock her faith. So much for being tolerant of other views. I freely admit that many truth claims are damaging. Bad truth kills, no doubt about it. However, we cannot move away from the notion of truth with a capital T. And as Pilate asked Jesus before ordering him to be crucified, what is truth? I suggest all the truth we need to know about life and death, how to live in this world, how to be right with God, to live with freedom and joy, is found in the Bible. My appeal to you at this point, playing on the words of John Lennon, is to give Jesus a chance. I admit that many professing Christians have been mean-spirited, unkind, racist, and worse. The Roman Catholic Church fought the Crusades and killed thousands of Muslims. The Puritans burned witches at the stake in Salem. Evangelicals have said horrible things about homosexuals and political liberals. I am sorry these things have been done and said. They are wrong. However, I challenge you to look at Jesus. I challenge you with an open mind to go ad fontes, to the fountain, to the sources, and to see for yourself who He is. How do you know that? I suggest you begin by reading the Gospel of John in the New Testament Scriptures. Read it slowly and ask, God, if you exist, if you are the Son, then please reveal yourself to me. I really want to know the truth. I believe if you will do that honestly and with an open mind, then you will find how wonderful He is, how beautiful He is, how marvelous He is to meet your every longing in this world and the next.
Pastor Alan Baker answering the question, who is Jesus? On this special Palm Sunday edition of Between Two Worlds, the radio outreach ministry of Christ Community Presbyterian Church in West Hartford, Connecticut. More on the church in just a moment. It's nice to know you're listening from week to week on this 30-minute broadcast. And if you have any questions about something you've heard today or in recent weeks, would you let us know? Even if the program has been a blessing and you have no question, we'd like to hear that as well. Our email address is radio@christcpc.org. That's radio@christcpc.org. You can always download or listen to these broadcasts on our website at christcpc.org. Just click on the Sermons Online tab on the left, and then you'll see a series of broadcasts from this program, including today's April 17th, Who is Jesus? You'll also see those from recent weeks and then sermons that have been preached at Christ Community by Pastor Al Baker and others. Again, ChristCPC.org. Just click the Sermons Online tab. There's no cost or obligation on your part to listen again or to download and pass these along to a friend or loved one. The Congregation of Christ Community Presbyterian Church, part of the Presbyterian Church in America denomination, meets weekly for worship on Sunday mornings at 9:30 at the West Hartford Town Hall Auditorium. It's right next to Blueback Square. There is a municipal lot east of the building. You can park at no charge there. Just bring your pass in. We'll validate it. Again, Blueback Square is right where we're located, right next to it, at the West Hartford Town Hall Auditorium, 50 South Main in West Hartford. We have a number of activities going on in the days ahead, including a Maundy Thursday service this Thursday night. It's a full orchestra, great message, and just good music and a good time at the West Hartford Town Hall Auditorium. That's at 7 o'clock this Thursday night. And then Sunday morning, of course, on Easter Sunday, there'll be a message, celebration of the Lord's Supper, and a number of activities as well for virtually all ages of your family. You can go to our website and learn more at christcpc.org. Well, as always, thanks for tuning in to this edition of Between Two Worlds, the radio outreach ministry of Christ Community Presbyterian Church in West Hartford. Tune in all this week for Pastor Baker's one-minute spots, and then come back next Sunday morning at 7:30 on Easter as together we live Between Two Worlds.